everyone. My name is Abby. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Abby.
It's good to be here. My sobriety date is October 19th of 2007, and my home group is a Happy Destiny group in Chatham. We meet Tuesdays and Fridays at 8 p.m., and I have a sponsor, and I sponsor other people and all that good stuff. And thanks for having me for these past 3 weeks. It's been super fun. I wish I could have done it longer, but I have a daughter. It's complicated with childcare situation and everything. So, like, doing 6 or 12 weeks would have been a bit much for me. But I could talk about the big book for, like, weeks. Or, like, just hear myself talk for weeks. I'm, like, my favorite speaker in AA. So, you know. I'm just kidding. Sort of. But I really do. I love, I don't know if it's like, I'm like a book person, you know, I was like an English major in college or something. Like, I like discussing literature in general. But also, since this is like not just talking about the words, it's talking about, you know, my experience and, you know, how the words in this book has like changed and impacted my life is powerful and enjoyable and fun to talk about. So, I'm not lying when I say I've had a good time being here. So tonight I'm going to talk about steps 10, 11, and 12. Welcome to anyone coming back or visiting. If you haven't been through the steps before and this doesn't make any sense, that's okay. Don't feel like you're missing something. The steps are in order for a reason. So by presuming when you get to step 10, that means you've done 1 through 9. So if you haven't and with things I'm going to say are confusing, then talk to someone after the meeting and, you know, get a sponsor and start working the steps and stuff. I know when I was new, I was like really afraid to ask questions. Like, I just assumed that like I was supposed to know everything that was going on, which obviously I wasn't, but things clicked like 5 years later. Like, someone would say something and I wouldn't really like ask for any clarification, but then like 5 years later I'd think about it and know exactly what they meant, you know. But don't be afraid to ask people questions. We're not too scary. So I stopped with step 9 last week. And I just wanted to, I forgot if I had said this or not. There's some people here that weren't here last week or whatever, but what's really important about the amends process is like, it's such an individual thing that like, it's so important to work with a sponsor with it. I know that there's a lot of like tricky situations that come up. You know, there's a lot of harms that we've done that are like, need to be treated with care and discretion, and like really important to not bring about more harms in doing this process. You know, not the end of the world if it does happen, but we kind of want to avoid that. This is about, you know, righting the wrongs of our past, not creating new wrongs. And so there's just some very discreet things that, you know, sometimes it's best that like the amends is like never talking to that person ever again, you know, or whatever. Or like, I think I had an example last week of like some things, like if the person doesn't know about it, you don't necessarily want to tell them about it. And I've had some weird things, like when sponsees come to me, even like a couple months ago, I was stumped. Like, a sponsee had her father passed away, and normally, you know, you go to maybe the gravesite or something like that and read a letter and, you know, make the amends that way. But her father was cremated, and so I was like, you know, it might be kind of weird to just like talk to an urn or something. So anyway, I prayed about it for a while. I talked to my sponsor about it, and we decided, you know, her father's ashes were like in this little football, because he's a football coach, and she held him in her hand and said her amends to him. And it was actually really, and I was there, and it was really, really powerful. And, you know, so, like, things, the point, the large, and then we decided that she was going to make, like, a contribution to some, like, football association or whatever, you know, in her father's memory. But these things are, like, individual, you know, situations. And I think that each thing needs to be handled on an individual basis. So. And so I know we've all read the 9-step promises like a million times in your meetings, but I'm just going to read them real quick. The bottom of page 83. So, you know, there's tons of promises in this book. you know, these are the things that are going to come true as a result of doing the work in here. Also, you know, some, like, anti-promises, like, if you don't do this, you're going to die kind of stuff. So this is sort of, like, talking about the kinds of things that we get when we start working through our ninth step. So we are painstaking about this phase of our development. We will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see that our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And my experience was, like, this didn't all come true right away, all of it all at once. I think I probably said this at the fifth step, too, because I usually do. But, like, those are things that happened to me over time, you know, and things I didn't necessarily realize. So it's not like I woke up one day and I'm like, wow, my self-seeking sure has slipped away. Good golly, you know. But sometimes, and usually it's like, I like to think of it as if you have a cold, you know, you take some DayQuil or something to relieve the symptoms, you know, like the coughing and the sneezing and the whatever else, sore throat. And then 4 hours later, you have to take more of it because you're just treating the symptoms. Okay? Now, say you have a cold and you lay in bed for a week, you drink a lot of fluids and do whatever you need to do. And then by the end of it, the cold's gone, and you forgot what it was even like to be sick. That's kind of what, like, doing the steps is. It's like we treat the underlying conditions, and then suddenly you realize, you're like, wow, like, I'm really not full of fear today, you know? Like, I really haven't harmed anyone in a really long time. And this is just my general experience, is it wasn't like a sudden thing. It was a slow thing that waxes and wanes depending on where I'm at spiritually at the moment. I even had this experience, like, I haven't been with my ex-husband in about 5 years, but I had this experience, but we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. I had a lot of regrets about that relationship that kind of went in and out, you know, not like huge, like I wish that never happened. But I had a sponsee who was going through this breakup, this really codependent relationship, and it just, I got this wave of gratitude that, like, that relationship helped teach me the difference between codependency and love, you know, because it was totally codependent and crazy and weird, you know? So, like I said, like, it's this, you know, it's this sort of these things that just kind of, like, come up as you keep working through process, and it's pretty cool. So anyway, on to step 10. I'm just going to read it out of the book. It's on page 84. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So this is saying, like, okay, we've done a lot of good stuff in step 1 through 9. Like, let's keep it going, keep the momentum going. It's like if you are a runner and you stop running and you get out of shape. You know, you can't say, like, oh, man, I used to run, like, 10 years ago. It was great. And, like, you know, it doesn't really work like that. You got to keep doing it. And the same thing with, like, our spiritual practice. You don't just, like, go through a couple steps and all of a sudden you're better and you're cured and whatever. It's sort of like a lifelong keeping in shape kind of deal. We've entered the world of the spirit. The next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others in our code. So I've always thought of this, or been taught, I should say. This is like the spot check inventory that we do throughout the day. And it's pretty simple. I'll call it like the four and the four. So you look for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And then when they crop up, you pray at once for God to remove them. And that doesn't mean that God's going to remove them at once. You know what I mean? So you can say, God, please help me get out of self right now. I realize I'm stuck in self-pity. Like, whatever, doesn't mean, like, automatically you're going to not be feeling sorry for yourself. And then discuss them with someone immediately. Make amends if we have harmed anyone, and then turn your thoughts to someone that you can help. So it's like four things to do when they crop up. And basically, this is to help prevent us from just being complete jerks throughout the day, really. You know what I mean? And sometimes I need it more than others. This thing has happened over my sobriety, where my conscience has grown back, you know, where I, like, feel bad about that. It's the worst. It really is. Where I, like, feel bad about things, you know. And, you know, you kind of get to a point when you realize before you take an action that it's going to have bad consequences, and sometimes you take it anyway, and sometimes you don't. So it's really hard for me to hold on to any of these things, I guess, is what I'm talking about. It's very uncomfortable. If I tell a lie, if I do something that's dishonest, like either by a lie of omission, purposely not telling anyone, or, you know, whatever, I really feel it. And sometimes, again, not immediately. And then it'll come out sideways. Like, maybe I won't. I'll do something. I'm trying to think of a concrete example, but I can't think of anything right now. Maybe it'll come to me. Maybe I'll do something that's, like, really selfish, like blow off a sponsee or, like, blow off a newcomer or something like that. And then, like, 3 nights later, I'm having trouble sleeping. I'm not going to immediately put together those two things, but after a while, you kind of realize that, like, my thoughts and behaviors and actions, like, directly affect all my other thoughts, behaviors, and actions, you know. Or, you know, say I'll do something dishonest or whatever, and then I'm, like, overeating at dinner, or, like, compulsively, like, snacking or something, or overspending, or, like, talking to a guy I shouldn't be talking to, or whatever it is, you know what I mean? Like, all these, like, little things that come out. And sometimes I'm more willing than others to do the work to get rid of these things. I do a lot. I was just talking to David before the meeting. My sponsor lives abroad now, and we do a lot of work through email. And I have been known to send her little mini inventories throughout the day. If someone's, like, really pissing me off or whatever, I'll do, like, a four-column thing in an email. I'll write out, like, how you would do in a four-step. You write out, I'm resentful, the cause, what it affects, and what my part is, you know? And it really helps, too, especially if I am thinking about acting on it. Like, I remember a few months ago, my friend sent me this text message that really irked me, you know? And I immediately wanted to send some snarky response back, you know, and, like, start an argument and just, like, be right about it. And instead, I wrote out, like, this four-column inventory. I waited a couple hours, and I, like, just said, I think I just said okay to whatever she had said, you know? And that's, like, I think that, like, we're human, okay? We're going to have resentment. We're going to take selfish actions. Like, we're not going to be perfect all the time. Getting sober doesn't mean, like, the halo comes out, and all of a sudden I'm, like, scrubbed clean and a wonderful person. Like, not at all. But I really, really, really do believe that this work helps us from acting on those feelings and thoughts. And then sometimes I don't. And I scream and yell at people, you know, and then I have to make an amends. Same friend. About a month ago. Same kind of situation. Sent me a text message that kind of pissed me off. And I actually said, I said, I think we should speak about this over the phone. You know, like, let's, you know, maybe call me later or whatever, because I didn't want to get into, like, a text message argument or whatever. So I did all the things I was supposed to do. I prayed about it. I talked to someone and whatever. And the next day, I still ended up screaming, yelling at her like a maniac on the phone. I don't know. I was going through some other shit, I guess, at the time, and I took it all out on her. And so what I did 2 days later is I did the thing where it says, we make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. I called her up. I said, I love you. I'm so sorry. This wasn't about you. I was taking out my anger on you. This is about something else. And it was fine. Just what you had to do. It's basically called being an adult. just trying not to hurt people and righting the wrongs that you have. So these are some really powerful promises coming up. That'd be nice. I don't know if anyone's still here struggling in the disease, still thinking about drinking or whatever it may be. On the bottom of page 84 into 85, it says, "And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as if from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward the liquor has been given to us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we are placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn it off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor we are afraid. That is our experience, and that is how we react so long as we keep a fit spiritual condition." Like, this isn't saying, don't go to bars because you're going to be tempted. You know, don't keep alcohol in your house. It doesn't say, don't be friends with people who drink. it doesn't say, avoid people, places, and things. This says the problem is removed. And later in the 12th step, it's going to talk about how we can go anywhere and do anything as long as we're in fit spiritual condition and our motives are good. And how powerful is that? Because if you're an alcoholic like I was, when you wake up every single morning thinking about drinking or thinking about how I'm not going to drink today. I don't live like that. I just think, I wake up in the morning and I just think about what I have to do today. And it's incredible. And it's so true. Like, I don't avoid temptation. I'm a journalist. Right now, I've been writing a series of articles about profiling different breweries in New Jersey. So I've been visiting the breweries. Breweries. I have a hard time saying that word. I did an article about the best beer bars in New Jersey as well. And, you know, that I learned a lot about hops and stuff I never knew before. Very interesting. I know all about how beer is made, and I have absolutely no desire to try any of this. Whatsoever. I don't care about IPAs or pills. Or, I don't know. Last thing I probably drank was like Keystone Light or something. Like, I don't know. So I know nothing about beer, fancy beer, craft beer, anything. But I've learned a lot. Knowledge. I go to concerts today. I go to friends' parties if they're at a bar. I go pretty much anywhere. And like sometimes it's not that I want to drink. It's more that like it's kind of can be annoying to me around drunk people. So I still, like, a lot of time will bring my own car if I'm going to, like, an event or something. Just because, like, I don't want to stay out till like, 4 in the morning. And, like, I don't want to be drunk. Like, I'm good. I want to be in bed early and, you know, whatever. And, you know, sometimes it's nice to have someone else there. I mean, if you're in early sobriety and you haven't done the step work yet, you don't go to a bar. Like, but, like, by the time we get to this point in it, we are recovered from the obsession to drink and use. If that makes sense. So it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How best can I serve thee, thy will, not mine, be done? These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish is a proper use of the will. Whew. That's another pretty powerful one. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot. I really like to think that I'm, like, good in all situations, but there's a lot of situations that stress me out or make me nervous or, like, agitate me, you know, and that's when I really realize how, like, uncured I am and how I just have this, like, kind of recovered state. So, for example, when I hang out with my parents for any extended period of time, they, like, just irk me so much, you know? And it's a constant thing. And I can go into that negative attitude and just be like, F this, I don't want to be here, I'm just showing up because I'm supposed to, and whatever. Or I can go with the attitude of love and service, like what we're talking about here, and actually have, like, maybe an okay time. You know, I can say, how best can I be of service to my parents? God, your will be done, not mine. You know, it's not about me. It's not about me not wanting to be here and being, like, a sulky teenager or whatever it is. But, like what I'm, I guess what I'm headed at is, like, I can be like that. You know, I'm not, like, some spiritual, you know, I, you know, maybe one day I'll reach enlightenment and, like, nothing will bother me or I'll be perfect. Like, I don't know. It hasn't happened yet. But I can tell you that most of the time, and sometimes I struggle more than others. The last few months have been a bit difficult for me, just emotionally, with, like, transitioning careers and job stuff, and my living situation is unpleasant. But a lot of the time, I don't feel like I'm swimming upstream. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm just trying to go with the flow. And there are times when I'm resisting everything and resisting everyone and getting in conflict and just constantly wanting my way and my will. And it's an uncomfortable way to live. It really is. My sponsor said something to me. I was in a dark place a few years ago, and she's like, the secret is, like, this work is actually the easier, softer way. being in this disease, the sickness, being an act of alcoholism, fighting off those urges to drink or giving in or whatever, that's the harder way. Just going with the flow, just going with God's will, just going, being of service to others and abandoning yourself to the program and to God, like, it's actually a lot easier. You're not fighting anyone or anything. So, let's talk about step 11 a little bit. I don't want to read really from here, but there is some specific direction. So step 11 is maintaining our conscious contact with God through prayer and meditation. So what I've learned, or what people have taught me, is that meditation, as they meant it when they wrote this book in 1934-9, whatever it was, meant, like, thoughtful contemplation. Mm-hmm. So it's like when a general, in the morning, when he meditates on how his troops should be, or, like, what their strategy is. So you're just, like, it's thoughtful contemplation about the plans or what's going on in your life or whatever it is. For me, I do, like, some hardcore Buddhist meditation stuff. But I think that, like, your spiritual practice, your prayer practice should be as individual as whatever works for you. So there are really specific instructions here about prayers. I really like the On Awakening stuff. It says On Awakening, we think about our 24 hours a day, and we ask to be divorced from selfishness or selfish, dishonest, or self-seeking motives, which I think is really great, the motives part. So it says, under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, because God gave us these brains to use, and when we remove our own self-will from the picture and our own dishonest motives and me trying to get what I want and try to manipulate people and all that stuff, like, things, then it's okay to, like, use these brains that God has given us. It also gives, like, some specific things to reflect on at night. We're resentful, selfish, dishonest, afraid. It's all on page 86 in the big book. If you're having trouble with prayer, my suggestion for people that I work with is, like, just read what's in the book and go from there. Like, it's very simple. For me, it's, like, after a few years, I needed a little bit more, and I sought some outside stuff. And I know people go to church, they go to synagogue, but for me, it was, like, Buddhist principles. But, like, whatever works for you. This is God's of our own understanding. Like, I think that I'm not here to tell anyone what their spiritual practice should look like. I can tell you what I do, but whatever gets you through the day, man, go for it. I do at night, a few times a week, write out an email to my sponsor. Like I said, she lives abroad now. I don't see her very often. So as part of what helps keep me accountable, is I write out these questions in the 11th step to her in an email and answer them. Was I resentful, selfish, dishonest, afraid? Have I kept something for myself? Do I owe an apology? That kind of stuff. And I answer them. And then, if there's something that needs to be discussed, we discuss it. It doesn't say in the big book to email a sponsor a few times a week with written questions. So, like, again, like, that's just part of my... I just drooled. I'm sorry. That's just part of my personal practice. And I don't know. I think that it's a fluid thing that changes over time. And my conception of God has changed over time. So in the beginning, I didn't have much of a conception. Nowadays, I think of it more as, like, kind of karma and, like, the universe. So, like, if I put good vibes out to the universe, then good things come back to me. But conversely, like, if I'm putting bad vibes out in the universe, like, bad things are going to come back to me. And, like, for me, that's a way of keeping myself accountable, too. Like, I want to be there to be of service to my brothers and sisters because I think that my part is to be part of the greater good and be part of the greater whole. And, like, we live in a in society because we're social people. And we're like wolves, humans. We're pack animals. And we feel best when we're giving back to the pack. You know, when we're trying to be a part of. And it makes it a little easier. I mean, some people, you know, they have specific religious gods or whatever. Like, do whatever you gotta do, you know? So, in thinking about the day we may face indecision, which happens to me a lot, I'm a freelancer, so I wake up in the morning and there's no boss there telling me what to do. If I'm trying to take the weight of the world on my shoulder and, like, figure it all out, it's very overwhelming. I break down in tears. I'm like, I don't know what to do today, you know? But if I pause and I ask God for guidance and direction, and I ask what he thinks I should do, and I take maybe 15 minutes to, like, do some intense breathing and concentration, it's like, oh, I don't actually have to figure it out. This is what they're talking about when they're saying, like, let go and let God and, like, turn it over. Like, that's the actual act of it. It's like, okay, God, whatever you want me to do today, I'm going to do today. You know, whatever article you think I should write right now, whatever piece, whatever client you think I should work for, that's what I'm going to do today. We ask God for inspiration, intuitive thought, or struggle. We relax and take it easy. Like, stop fighting. Like, just stop. The weight of the world is not on your shoulders. You don't have to figure it out. It's okay. And what used to be the hunch or occasional inspiration becomes part of the working mind. This is my favorite part in the big book. I missed this for, like, 8 years. But being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We may pay for this presumption all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Oh my God, how many times did I think it was a sign from God? And that, like, this was it. It usually happened with, like, guys that I was dating. I would see, like, literally sometimes a street sign. Say it was, like, his name on a street sign. I'm like, it's meant to be, you know? It's a sign. It's not a sign. It's just a street sign, actually, like a literal sign. Or, like, a song would come on a radio. And I'm like, it's a sign. And then I'd, like, make impulsive decision based on these crazy signs that I saw. You see signs when you're looking for signs. It's been my experience. If there's any sort of doubt, confusion, that generally means for me is to take no action. It's to sit still and be patient and wait for the answer to come. I have made so many decisions based on fear that have not worked out for me at all. I'll give you an example. A few years ago, I was working in advertising. I was a copywriter. I was a freelancer for this company, and they were going to offer me a full-time job. Great job on paper, okay? Salary, benefits, bonus. I had my own office. It was great. I had a lot of responsibility. They loved me. It was, on paper, a great thing. But I felt a little funny about it, you know? It was very boring. I didn't like the work. Pharmaceutical advertising, and, you know, I have a lot of, like, convictions against the pharmaceutical industry and, you know, all this stuff. So sort of like I'm working for the enemy. And it was an awful commute, like, terrible. Sometimes it would take me 2 hours to get there in the morning. And so it was a lot of, like, oh my God, do I take the job? And I took the job and I hated it and it was miserable. And that's because I made this decision based on fear that I wasn't going to get another job offer down the line, you know, or I was afraid I was going to be broke without really actually looking at the numbers and realizing it. But, you know, I had enough money for the next few months to find a new gig or whatever. And it was miserable. You know, and that's like what happens when I take my own will back, is I make decisions that are impulsive and fearful, and I have negative consequences. Conversely, when I made the decision to end things with my ex-husband, there was a period about 6 months when we were trying to figure out whether we were going to work it out or not. You know, we had talked about it, we separated, whatever, we were working it out. And I turned it over to God every single day. I was like, I don't know what to do, God. This relationship is in your hands. I want nothing to do with it. And then one day, it was just over. You know, we ended things, we split up. And I have not once looked back on that decision and regretted it at all. Because I 100% believe I brought my higher power into that decision, and he made the decision for me, and I was not a part of the equation. And that's because I was patient enough at that time to wait for the answer. And when you know it, you feel it in your gut. You know, I think God lives here and in my heart, and then I live in my head. And the only thing that gets in the way of me having a happy, successful life is my own self-will in my own head. Self-will. Whew, self-will. It's a bitch. So I hope that hammers home the importance of prayer and meditation. It's a daily thing. It's an hourly thing. Sometimes when you need it, sometimes I need it more than others. Sometimes I need more of a reminder, you know, that I'm not in charge anymore, and that my life now is to be of service to others. But yeah, so it says, like when we're doing this regularly, like on page 88, we are in then much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. Like, I've made so many of them. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily. We are not burning up energy foolishly. Like, I think of myself literally swimming against the tide. That's how I'm burning energy foolishly. When we are trying to arrange our lives to suit ourselves, it works. It really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There's action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. So that's where we're going to end with step 12. I think before... I don't know. I have this idea. Before I do that, I'm just going to read page 164. The part... when it says, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation that what you can do for the man, or each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to you, to pass for you and countless others. So when we get up to step 12... which is basically sponsoring other people, it's and practicing the principles in all our affairs. So meaning, like, it's great if we show up in AA and we're great, good people for an hour, but we need to go out for the rest of the day and be decent human beings. So practicing the principles in all our affairs. But so I think regardless of how much time you have or whatever, they're thinking by the time you get to step 12 that you can have something to transmit. You know, that you've developed a conscious contact with God. And, you know, in the beginning, I think I started sponsoring people when I was about, like, 6 months sober. I didn't have a lot of experience being sober. But I had started to develop this, like, conscious contact with God where I could at least show this girl how I got through the first, or got through the steps. You know what I mean? I had that experience to share. Not so much, like, as much life experience or whatever. And I know that sometimes, like, I'll be a little bit off with the girls that I sponsor, and I could feel it, you know, that I'm not necessarily transmitting, like, the best message of hope and recovery. And so one thing that really helps keep me accountable in my own program is because, like, I really do care about the girls that I sponsor. It's like, I have to make sure my own house is in order. I have to make sure I'm regularly attending meetings, that I'm regularly praying and meditating, and that I'm regularly taking inventory. Because without that, like, I'm not going to have anything to give to other people, if that makes sense. So I guess, like, the point of all this book is basically to get you to the point where you can pass it on to other people. And different people have different philosophies about when you should start sponsoring people and whatever. My sponsor was just like, as soon as I like had made through some amends, she's like, go out and start finding people to help, you know, and take them as far as you got. And like, it also, like I said, it really does kind of encourage you to keep going too, because you don't want, like, you know, if you're if you're still trying to make your amends and stuff, and then you got sponsee catching up on you, you're going to feel like a little bit more inclined to keep going or whatever. It's a way to keep ourselves accountable. But, you know, whatever works for you as far as, like, time and all that kind of good stuff. But, so practical experience shows that nothing so will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. So, we do this for insurance purposes so that we can, you know, now the obsession to drink has been removed. But there's plenty of people who have had long-term sobriety that have relapsed. The obsession has come back because they let up on their spiritual program of action, and you know, so actively working with other people helps prevent us from drinking again. So carry this message to other alcoholics: you can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Some are sicker than others. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is a bright spot of our lives. This is, yeah, sometimes. So this book, the first part of it, is all about specific directions for gaining the trust of a newcomer and starting to work with them. And it starts off by telling you where you can meet people to work with. AA meetings are a good place to start. Going to detoxes and hospitals and carrying the message there is also a great place to find sick and suffering alcoholics to carry the message to. And there's a lot of stuff in here I ignored for a while. Specifically, there's some parts about not trying to 12-step people who don't really want it. Wasting your time and wasting other people's, the person's time. I said this in the week one, but the only step you really need to have down perfect is step one. This stuff, you will not recover unless you're done drinking. It sucks, but it's true. Maybe there are other programs out there that can help you at different phases, but this is a program for people who want and need to stop drinking for good and for all. So if I'm trying to 12-step people who are not done drinking, it's a waste of time. And to be quite honest, like, sometimes I don't have the stomach for it. Like, it's just so sad. It's so sad to see people losing their kids and their families and their houses and their jobs and losing everything and not being able to stop drinking. It is heartbreaking. People who do this stuff professionally, like, you know, substance abuse counselors and people who work in rehabs, like, I don't even know how they do it because it's too heartbreaking for me. So that's number one. Work with people. And I really try not to chase people either. I invite newcomers up to meetings, you know what I mean? But I generally don't offer to sponsor anyone unless they're really new and don't understand how the whole thing works or whatever. I try to let people come to me because when I chase people, again, like, I'm wasting my time. Like, if they don't really want it, it's not going to work. And again, I don't mean that to be, it may come off sounding judgmental or something, but I don't mean it at all. It's literally the truth. Let's see. See your man alone if possible. So when you're first meeting with someone, like, meet with them, like, one-on-one. And in this, like, I know when I was new and my sponsor took the time to meet with me one-on-one, it, like, meant so much to me. Because I was so lonely. I really didn't have any friends left. I didn't have a social life. No one really took interest in my life because I had pushed everyone away. You know? And you might not realize it. When you take the time out to meet with someone face to face and listen to them, you know, and be honest and candid, it means a lot. So I remember the first, and then it talks about like sort of talking about things to talk about with people when you're new. So I remember the first time I met with my first sponsor. It's like 30 days sober, and we ended up going on a 12-step call together. She was like, "I hope you don't mind. This woman's gonna be drunk, you know." And like, I had no idea what a 12-step call was. I didn't know any of this stuff, but I loved it. I thought we were like the AA brigade that's going to save the drunk. I was like, "Yeah, let's do it. Let's get them." And I remember she was doing exactly what this says in this book. So it says like, if your man's in a good mood, you know, tell happy, funny drinking stories. Basically, if they're feeling kind of down, you know, share, commiserate, you know, oh, these are the terrible things that happened to me when I was drinking. And that's exactly what she did. And I remember her, like, the first time we met, she talked about being molested and raped and all that stuff, and I was like, whoa, like, she is not holding back. Like, maybe you should save this for the next meeting or something, lady. But, like, it made me immediately feel comfortable to open up with her. And so my my experience with people is like, as I can make myself as vulnerable as possible, it allows other people to be vulnerable as well. Because I'm like, I don't give a shit, you know, basically. I'm not ashamed, and you can say anything, and I've heard it all. And then another important thing, is not being super, like, vigilante or, you know, like, a crusader, reformer. I found usually best to just kind of gently talk about the 12 steps and gently share my experience about them and, you know, talk about how important it is that I did it and I found it a higher power, but not being like, you need to do this, you know, unless someone's, like, really... Again, that kind of depends. Sometimes it's just like, you need to do this or you're going to die, you know, kind of thing, but... Usually, like, just talking about how much this, like, changed my life and stuff. And it piques people's interest if they've never heard it before. You know, if I could talk about the things that, like, how I was like then, you know, and how I'm like now, and how I got from point A to point B was through the 12 steps, like, it piques people's interest. And there's really no need, I found, to hit anyone over the head with a big book and, like, you know, force people against their will to get in my car and take them to meetings or anything like that. You know, it's not attractive. Like, then they don't want what I have if I'm screaming and yelling and being crazy about it. You know, it says on page 93, it's the main thing is that he'd be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and live by spiritual principles. Like, stress the spiritual feature freely. Say that he does not have to agree with your own conception of God, you know. And then, you know, not talking down from a spiritual or moral hilltop, like we're all in this together. Here's another important thing, another lesson I've had to learn the hard way. Page 95. If he is not interested in your solution, if he expects you only to act as a banker for his financial difficulties or a nurse for his sprees, you may have to drop him until he changes his mind. This he may do after he hurts some more. I take that pretty seriously in a lot of different ways. Again, like, this is sort of like an individual thing, an individual basis, but, you know, I've learned that my job is to, like, take people to the 12 steps. Like, if you have money problems, perhaps you should speak to, like, a financial advisor. You know, not that I'm not going to be here for you in that regard. I'm not an expert. I'm not a banker. I don't think I have any opinion on what medications people should take because I'm not a doctor. Like, you know, I don't have, you know, I can share my experience, sure. But I'm not going to tell you what to do in regards to, like, your health. Or, you know, your life as a whole. I don't think that's my job. Because quite honestly, a lot of the time, is I don't know. If someone asks me what to do, should I break up with this person? Or should I just... I don't know. You know? I can barely run my own life. Like, I don't think that my job is to run other people's lives. Again, I can share my experience. Like I did today with the sponsee. Like, My experience is, like, after a breakup from a super, like, crazy codependent relationship is, like, you need time because you're using that person as a higher power, and now you need time to develop a relationship with a higher power again. And so if you jump into another relationship, you're probably just going to use that person as a higher power before, and human powers will always fail you. Mm-hmm. And I concluded that conversation by saying, you're going to do whatever you're going to do. Because people are going to do whatever they're going to do. So... when I first came into the rooms, the first chapter, the first meeting I ever went to, this was the first chapter we ever read. This was my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, sorry, brothers. And in paragraph, page 97, here are some of the 12-step promises. So never avoid these responsibilities, but be sure you are doing the right thing if you assume them. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. So we talked, the whole book is all these like construction metaphors for building this arch. So we have the foundation stone, and that's helping other people. A kindly act once in a while isn't good enough. It's a good place to start if you're new, you know, a kindly act. But it's not enough after a while. You have to act the good Samaritan every day if need be. It may mean the loss of many nights' sleep, great interference with your pleasures, your interruptions to your business. It means sharing your wife. Oh my God. That was the worst. It says wives on the thing below. Sharing your money and your home, counseling frantic wives, not sharing them, and relatives. Innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of the night, day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. A drunk may smash the furniture in your home or burn a mattress. You may have to fight with him and he is violent. Sometimes you have to call a doctor and administer sedatives under his direction. Another time you have to send for the police or an ambulance. Occasionally, you'll have to meet such condition. Like, if you're on firing lines, things will get real sometimes. but it always keeps interesting. You know, the past year I've driven some people to detox or driven them to the hospital and things like that. And to be honest, in the first 5 years I was sober, I did not like sponsoring people. I thought it was annoying. I didn't like hearing from people. You know, I didn't. Now it's either fairly joyful or just sort of like, I don't think too much about it. You know what I mean? Like, I just genuinely consider it a duty to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, my participation in this program means that I'm willing to meet some of these conditions. And that, to me, is, like, not doing half measures. You know, fully abandoning and fully surrendering myself. And you may find out you have some fun adventures and some fun stories to tell afterwards. But no one's ever smashed my furniture or burned a mattress, thankfully. Not yet. I mean... Drunk people get a little crazy sometimes, and that's okay. That's okay. Love and tolerance. So, 9 times out of 10, people I work with don't recover. That's sort of like maybe 8 times out of 10 or whatever. Like, someone will ask me to sponsor them, and then it'll go well for a little bit, and then they go back out because they weren't done drinking. And they come back, you know, years later or whatever, or sometimes they die. However, there is that sliver of hope. A couple of the girls that I work with have long-term sobriety, and they're doing really well in their lives. And that's when it all becomes worth it, you know? You get to see people be successful and, like, rebuild their lives and just, like, have beautiful relationships and have successes and go back to school and have careers and, you know, do all the things that, like, I just thought, like, I could never do as an alcoholic. I thought those things were for other people. I was doomed to live this sad, lonely, isolated, miserable life. That's what my life was. And other people just got to have good lives. Other people just got to live their dreams and be successful and do all this other stuff. I can tell you that the last few years... Oh, and then the whole idea of practicing the principles in all of our affairs. So that means, like, taking all the stuff that we've learned here and bringing it out into the real world. That's really the important part, and that's the hardest part. But I can tell you, over the past 2 years, like, I don't think that God got me sober to settle, right? Like, God gave me this second chance at life, and I think that while acceptance is a big part of this thing, like, I have to accept my family for who they am and all that stuff, I don't think if I'm unsatisfied in my career that I have to accept it, you know? I think that there are some dreams that I'm pursuing right now, and it's so hard and so painful at times, you know, some pretty, like, ambitious, lofty goals that I'm working towards slowly, but I just genuinely believe in my heart that God wants me to be the most, like, the best version of me. I don't think God wants me to look back at my life when I'm 80 years old and say, wish I'd done that, you know, I wish I took the risk. I wish I wrote that book, or I wish I did that, or, you know, like, I don't want to live that kind of life, and I think it would be selfish of me to say, F you, God, like, F you, higher power, thanks for everything, but I'm just gonna, like, you know, sit around and, like, not do anything. And so part of it for practicing the principles in all my affairs is living a very full, well-rounded, well-balanced life. So I have a life in here, you know, I have my meetings and the sponsees and my sponsor and all that stuff, and then I have a big life outside of AA, you know. And I think you do whatever works for you, but that's sort of the thing that works for me. And as long as those things stay balanced, it works out pretty well, because if I have one too much of the other, it's like too much, you know, all I do is spend time going to AA 3 times a day. I'm going to get resentful at AA. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, conversely, if I go and spend all the time working on my career, my social life, or whatever it is, I'm just going to start getting really resentful and angry and say, why do I waste all my time doing this stuff, you know? What has worked best for me is having the balance, you know? And I can sit here and say that, like, I've been able to, with the help of a higher power, been able to accomplish things that I never thought were possible, ever, for someone like me. So if you're new and you're struggling, get with the sponsor. This stuff works slowly, but everything that I was looking for in a bottle, I got out of the 12 steps. I wanted peace of mind. I wanted comfort. I wanted relief. I wanted freedom from anxiety and depression and suicidal thoughts. I wanted to be less socially awkward. you know, all that relief that I was seeking, I got here without all the nasty consequences. So that's all I have to share. Thanks for letting me be with you for the past 3 weeks. I really appreciate it. And meeting you.